Forever Dog.
Hey everyone, special bonus episode this week that is all about Asian American superheroes. It's a really good listen with some terrific panelists. Please do check it out. Also check out Sarah Kuhn's Heroine Complex series. You'll really enjoy them. I'm such a fan of Sarah and of these books. Check them out. You can get them from Amazon or your favorite bookseller. All right, here's the panel.
They write, they talk, and talk about what they write. Tune in to whenever the time is right. It's the Writer's Panel with Matt Blacker, and it's starting now. Oh, yeah!
I'm Sarah Geard. I am the author of the Heroine Complex series, which, if you don't know, I assume you probably do if you're here, but it is all about Asian American superheroines fighting increasingly ridiculous monsters in San Francisco and bonding with each other and falling in love and doing lots of stuff. And we're here to launch the fifth book in the series, which is Hollywood Heroine. And in this one, the two heroines, Evie Tanaka and Annie Chang, aka Evada Jupiter, actually go to LA to watch the filming of a TV show that is based on their real lives. They're also vampires. I swear this makes sense if you read the book. And, you know, I also write some other things. I write YA romance, like From Little Tokyo with Love. And I wrote I write comics sometimes, and I wrote one with the artist Nicole Gu that I think some of you are probably familiar with. It's called Shadow of the Batgirl. Look at that. And so anyway, to celebrate the launch of this book, you know, it has been 5 years since the first Heroine Complex book came out. And I thought it would be fun to have this kind of roundtable discussion about the state of the Asian American superheroine with two of my favorites. And so I am going to ask them to introduce themselves. Tell us who you are. I know a lot of people already know. Christina, can we start with you?
Oh, hi. Hi. Yes. Hi, I'm Christina Strain. I'm a former Marvel comic book colorist. So I have a little bit of a wild tale because I am also currently a TV, film, and comic book writer. So I started out as a colorist for Marvel, working on some books like Runaways, which I hope people have read. Like my heart, I worked on like 53 issues of it. I also worked on Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane, a few issues of X-Men, World War Hulk, some Thor, Daughters of the Dragon, long list. Then I transitioned into writing and I wrote for TV, worked on The Magicians, Shadow and Bone, a show that I can't talk about, another show that I can't talk about. And I also have a movie on Netflix called Finding Ohana, which was really fun. And then I've also written for Marvel Comics, written a few things for them, my favorite being Generation, the newest version of Generation X. That's it.
And you also wrote some, Generation X had this, but also in addition, you've written many amazing Jubilee stories, which I think
yes.
is a great, you know, great element for us to talk about.
Yes.
Asian American superhero.
Yes. Also, the first thing that I actually wrote for Marvel was a Civil War II short about White Fox, which was very fun to do.
Ella, how about you?
Hi, I'm Ella. By the way, really quick, I think I auditioned for Finding Ohana, but I just thought that was funny because I was like, oh, I think I tried to get that role. But anyway... I'm Ella. I am a actor and singer-songwriter. I'm most recently known for being in the movie called Birds of Prey with Margot Robbie and Ewan McGregor. I play the Asian American heroine Cassandra Cain, which was so cool. That movie came out in 2020, I think. But yeah, more recently I've been releasing a lot of music. I specifically released a single called Gold with Ruby Ibarra. And yeah, I'm just working on my music and yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for being here. I really appreciate it. I'm excited about this talk we're going to have. So first, as befitting superheroines, both fictional and real life, I wanted to talk some origin stories. I don't mean like you have to go back and be like, I was born in a small town, you know, like not like that. But I thought, you know, I was thinking about sort of what goes into creating, writing, performing, characters that are very specifically Asian American superheroines. You know, we're not talking about like sort of the generic superheroine, but specifically Asian superheroines. And I was wondering if we could all talk a little bit about how we approach that as artists. And I will talk about that as well. Don't worry, I didn't set this up just so you guys had to do all the work and I could just like sit back and enjoy myself. Christina, I think you have, you know, some really interesting experiences with this across the board, because it's both comics, it's TV and film, and you have also written both characters like this that are your own creations. Something like Finding Ohana. But you have also written like a lot of, you know, Asian heroines who already existed or things like that. So I was wondering if you could just talk about kind of your experiences across the board there with how you approach sort of creating and writing and just coming up with these specifically Asian American heroines.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think every character that I've ever written that is Asian American has definitely had a little bit of my own perspective in it. Just the quick rundown is I was born and raised in Seoul, South Korea. My mom's Korean. I lived there till I was 18. And then I moved to the US. So my perspective as an Asian American is very like Asian American because I was raised in Korea. Like for me, Squid Game takes me to a nostalgic place from my childhood, which is wild. I'm like, is this what white people feel when they watch Stranger Things? But like,
it sounds almost like you're watching Squid Game for like comfort, which is perhaps not everyone's experience of that show, but I love really, that for you.
Yeah, it is wild. I'm like, all those neighborhood, the Marvel episode, I'm like, that looks like my Taiwanese neighborhood. Like, I used to play marbles in alleys like that. And then like the bulky, I'm like, I used to eat that. Everybody's now calling it taco now, but when I was growing up, it was bulky. So like things like that. Who knew?
Christina's going to be like, you guys, I have this really like heartwarming, like comfort show for you all to watch during the holidays.
It's Squid Game.
It's the Hunger Games meets my childhood. I love that show for very many reasons, but I have applied a lot of my background to everything. Like I said, the first story that I ever wrote for Marvel was a White Fox story. And it was when my editor pitched it to me, because the character is Korean. He had pitched this idea to me that White Fox and Carol Danvers would kind of have the same viewpoint. And I had a moment where I was like, knowing South Korean history and knowing that South Koreans had no choice in Korea being divided into two countries, the people in the room that decided that were China, North Korea, and the US. And the US made that decision on the South Korea's behalf. That story was informed by that, where the end of that story is White Fox saying, we can take care of ourselves. And she's talking about Koreans. I put a lot of myself into Jubilee. Like, that's my favorite character that I've written for Marvel. And like, you know, I grew up reading her, as I think a lot of people who read X-Men comics did, especially if you're an Asian, you know, American. That character meant a lot to us in the 90s. So it was really lovely, because by the time I got to write her, she had adopted a child. She was a vampire. And there were certain experiences that she had that I was able to put my own viewpoint into, because like, I'm an Asian American woman who has adopted a child, I grew up with her. So I understood her perspective, and like, I felt like my life was kind of where hers was. And then like, you know, with Finding Ohana, that story is about, you know, a Hawaiian girl who was raised in New York, going back to Hawaii and kind of understanding her culture. It's a little bit of a reverse of what I went through, where when I was 18, I moved to the States and I was like, I know what it means to be American. And then I got there and I was like, I have no effing clue. Like, I had culture shock in a way that I didn't expect. And then like on Shadow and Bone, our main character, Alina, is a half Asian, you know, she's a half Asian character, and a ton of me went into that. So like, I like to think that a lot of the times what I'm trying to do is I think about the content I didn't have when I was a kid, and I put myself into that so that hopefully people reading it, especially if they're, you know, kids like me, can see that and see a portion of themselves in it and then move forward doing the same. So that's usually the perspective that I come in with. And there's a character I created for Marvel that's not a female, but he is a half Korean male, queer male X-Men. And like a lot of me and my former editor, Daniel Ketchum, who's an adopted Korean American, like I felt like I was making, I was like, I'm going to put you in X-Men and make you half Asian like me. And like, this is our kid. So yeah, I do this frequently.
I mean, we all have, or I guess I should say the writers here all have, you know, our characters that we talk about, like they're our children.
Yes.
I think, you know, the creative team for Cassandra Cain, me and Nicole Gu, the artist, and Sarah Miller, our wonderful editor, like, I feel like she kind of became our child. And the way that we talked about her was like, very, you know, like we were this team of aunties sort of like raising her in this book. Like, I think especially when you put yourself into it, it becomes so personal. It does feel like, you know, your child on the page.
It truly does. And then whenever you do anything that has a deep effect on them, like one of the characters I wrote in Gen X, Nature Girl, I don't think she had spoken before I wrote her. So I wrote her speaking because I was like, I'm not going to write an Asian female character that has no voice. That is wild. So I had her speak, and now then she had a very specific voice. And then after that, like I saw her showing up in a bunch of comics, and it was great to see that because it was just like, that's my baby. She's gone on. Other people are taking care of her. But then I'll also get people contacting me and being like, do you see what they're doing to your character? I'm like, well, she's not technically mine, but you know.
You're like, she's in college now. She's all grown up. I have to let her go out and see the world. So Ella, I'm interested in your perspective on this because you're kind of coming at it from, you know, the other side, like Christina and I are sitting in our apartments, like writing all these words for characters to say. And then you actually performs as this character who gets to say those words. So I was wondering if you could talk about, you know, what that experience has been like for you. And naturally, if you want to talk about what it was like sort of creating Cassandra Cain for the big screen, I know that will be of interest to people, but feel free to talk about, you know, any characters you want. What kind of goes into creating that for you?
Yeah, of course. I mean, when performing the role of Cassandra Cain over the 4 month span that we did shoot, I definitely felt this sense of like responsibility, just because like the Asian American community is, you know, like slowly growing their presence of, you know, Asian American superheroines on camera. So I just thought it was really important that I made sure that I did this right. So, I mean, like going into it, I definitely had long, long conversations with Christina Hodson, the writer, and Kathy Yan, the director, both really badass Asian American women who I was like so shocked that I was able to work with for my debut film. But yeah, I just really wanted to make sure that everything was authentic and felt right for this character because Birds of Prey is such a significant movie in my life and especially in the DC universe. So I think that putting this character into the media and on screen was really important. And I think it's going to definitely help expand the community of Asian American superheroines on camera. And I think that it's totally becoming a bigger thing now, you know, with like Shang-Chi and Eternals and all of that. So I was just really excited. And I thought it was just so fun creating a character and a person that people are going to watch. And, you know, like young girls, like young Asian American women can look up to this and see that, oh, hey, there's a character that I could finally relate to and that can look like me and someone that I can connect with. So yeah, that was really important for me.
That's so cool. And, you know, also that we can cosplay as because, yes. You know, like when I, at least when I was younger, it was always, you know, we played like Star Wars or Wonder Woman or, you know, the sort of big things like that. And of course, in Star Wars at the time, it was just the only woman was Princess Leia. The only major woman was Princess Leia. So it would always turn into like, you know, 17 girls being like, I want to be Princess Leia. And I was always disqualified first because they were like, well, you don't look like Princess Leia. You would be kind of, you know, this Princess Leia with like this asterisk of like, this is Asian Princess Leia. So I love that we have these characters now where it's like, you know, Cassandra Cain is Batgirl. Like Cassandra Cain is like an awesome character in her own right that we can sort of like embody without it being sort of an asterisk or, you know, like, oh no, you can't do that because you don't look like that. Yes. I was also curious what that audition was like. I don't know, like beat people up or like show your jewel thieving like prowess. Like, I was curious what that experience
was. Yeah. I mean, honestly, when the audition process was happening, I didn't even know that it was Cassandra Cain or that it was Batgirl. They just made up like random names and said that here's the storyline. It was kind of like a general plot of what was going on in Harley Quinn. Like, nobody even knew that it was Harley Quinn, at least for people who were auditioning for Cassandra Cain. But yeah, a lot of the scenes were talking about, you know, this very scrappy foster kid who just wanted like an opportunity and a chance to be out there. So thinking back, the audition process was like super stressful. But yeah, it was really fun. It was like a long 1 month process where I would go in like every Friday and I would do my scenes and show them what I can do. And we improvised a little, and then like I would leave, they would tell me, and then I would come back. But yeah, it was definitely stressful, but really a great learning experience too, because I got to do chemistry reads with Margot and Journey, which is something that I will always, you know, keep to, you know, near and dear to my heart. So
yeah. That's so awesome. I love hearing what you both have to say about this. I was kind of, you know, thinking about it for myself, because it has been 5 years since the first, you know, the first heroine came out. And certainly there are things that I've thought about continuously for all 5 years. But one of those was kind of about, you know, the specificity of the Asian American superheroine or heroine or, you know, leading character, and how there was kind of this moment, you know, near the beginning of that series, particularly when it was being announced, where it was kind of like, am I calling this, you know, this is my ode to just plain superheroes, just, you know, just that, or am I going to say, you know, this is very specifically about Asian American superheroines? And in the end, I felt like that was actually a very important thing for me to do, to identify it that way. Because something I sort of discovered, like, as I've talked about this book, as I've heard other people talk about their work and all of that, is there is kind of this urge sometimes from some writers and creators to say, you know, this character just happens to be X. And what I think they're trying to say with that is, this story is not just about race, or this story is not just about struggle, or this story is kind of not, you know, what we've seen before. And I really have grown to hate that phrase, this character just happens to be X, because I think it sets up that certain characters are the default, right? Certain characters are normal. Certain characters are just, you know, what we should expect is standard. And, you know, I've said, like, if you decide, if you're writing a book or a show or whatever, and you decide to make your whole cast white, that's still a choice. That is not just happens to be anything. That is a choice you're making. And I think for me, you know, particularly as I was writing the first book, one thing I sort of kept thinking about was, yes, this story is not just about race. This story is not just about being Asian. This story is not about, you know, teaching people about racism or whatever. It is, for the most part, you know, them having these superheroic antics and bonding and all of that. But their identity certainly still informs all of their experiences. It informs who they are in day to day. And, you know, one thing in that first book that a lot of people still bring up to me is that the two main characters, Evie and Aveda, you know, they become best friends when they're kids because they both have what is called a lunchbox moment. They have, you know, they are going to a mostly white school in a suburb, and which was, you know, my experience growing up. And they're the only two Asian kids in class, and they both bring in this food for their snack that the white kids think is gross. And it kind of turns into a thing, you know, a thing to make fun of them about and all of that. And, you know, that was something that I was like, okay, I feel like these characters are not characters that just happen to be something. They aren't characters that you can swap out, you know, for white characters. They are very specifically Asian American women, and that affects how they move through the world. So that is something that I certainly also keep in mind when I'm writing, you know, any characters, but I think especially my Asian American heroines, I feel very strongly about that specificity.
Yeah, I think that's the exact correct way to look at it. I mean, the perspective that I come with every time I write an Asian or Asian American, you know, character is I ask myself, you know, like, who is this person and how does their culture and their past inform who they are? Because, like, you know how it is. There's not one Asian American character to cover us all. So we're all going to be different. Like my, again, I grew up in Korea. So my identity is very different from, like, you know, a half Korean kid who grew up in the States. Like, we all have different perspectives. But that being said, I think it's silly to just be like, oh yeah, they just happen to be Asian. It's like, well, yeah, how does that inform them? And, you know, like, it, because it does, you're right, it does. Are they adopted? Were they raised here? You know, were they raised overseas? Like, what flavor of Asian are we talking here? You know, like, everybody's different. We all have different perspectives. And, like, would you, you know, they just happen to be white. Would you say that?
No one ever says that, because it's still, I think, considered, you know, very, very much the default. Yes. But you actually touched on something else I wanted to get into. And before we do that, just saying to our lovely viewers, if you would like to ask us a question, I know sometimes it's weird during the virtual events, people are shy, but you just have to put it in the Facebook chat and then Teresa will send it to us. And I will say, this is the one instance where a question is a comment because it's in the comments. One time we will let you get away with that. So use it wisely. The next thing I kind of wanted to talk about, kind of going off things that you both were saying about, you know, Ella, you were talking about how you felt some pressure, you know, having to represent this character, knowing that so many people love her, knowing that she's important to the Asian American community. And Christina, you were kind of talking about, you know, that as well, like how not one Asian character can represent for all Asian people because there is so much diversity within our gigantic umbrella identity. So something I wanted to kind of talk about was just that, you know, the sort of unique challenges, the pressures of writing these characters, especially as Asian American performers and writers and creators and all that. Because, you know, I've talked a lot about how when the first book came out, I had certainly something called the rep sweats, which is a term coined by my friends, Jenna Yang, Phil Yu, Joanna Lee. And it was basically, they came up with it when Fresh Off the Boat came out, because they were like, we're so excited, but we're also getting that kind of sick feeling where, like, if this show, if it doesn't go right, or if it's not very good, or if people don't like it, it goes away. There's a chance that, you know, we might not have another Asian-led sitcom for another 15 years. So, you know, it gives you this kind of sick feeling. And so I certainly felt like I started to have that from the creator side, where when my series was announced, you know, when they showed the first cover, which is very beautiful, Jason Chan has done all of these beautiful covers for the Heroine series. You know, when that was revealed, a lot of people were saying to me, I have waited for this my whole life. And I was like, awesome, but also I'm going to throw up now, because no one work can sort of serve everyone. You know, I've talked about this actually in the context of Jubilee, because when I was younger, I was a huge X-Men person and I actually didn't like Jubilee. I love Jubilee now. I would say I love Jubilee now. But I think when I was younger, I felt like, well, that's not me. You know, I'm not very cheerful. I don't smile very much. I can't shoot fireworks out of my hands. Like, you know, I don't wear yellow. Like, it felt like sort of like, here's what you get, here's what you have to like, and this is the only thing that you're getting. And so, you know, I certainly know what it's like to be the audience for something and still sort of feeling like this is, but this is, you know, not quite for me, because there just aren't as many examples out there. So I was wondering if we could sort of talk about that, that sort of pressure and the challenge and how you kind of deal with that as creators and artists.
Ellen, you want to go first?
Okay, sure. I mean, it's definitely a little bit of a challenge, and I always for sure feel the pressure of not only the fans, but just of the DC world and community in general. But I think when creating these roles, I really try to make it as authentic as I can. Of course, I read Shadow of the Batgirl, and I read a bunch of other comic books when I first found out that I was going to have the role of Cassandra Cain. But really, I think it's just listening to your gut and persevering and knowing that you have a whole community of Asian Americans and women and my family and friends who can really help me through all of the challenges and pressure. Even as being a young teenage girl, you know, going to school and things like that. So I think really with all the pressure in social media and other things like that I've dealt with, I also sometimes, if there's hate comments, I just, you know, tend to not care, because at the same time, like I really try to persevere and feel that, you know, I'm unique and independent, and I have the opportunities to do what I can to make the world a better place. So, yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I've gone through quite a journey with the Rex Swiss.
Let's hear it, Christina.
You know, it's like, you know, when you first start, you're just like, I want to do this. You're just excited, right? Because you're like, I'm just going to do this thing. And the reality of like you understanding your own opinion about like the way you've seen representation done on television starts to become more aware, like obvious. And then you start to worry, oh God, am I doing this wrong? Am I going to offend anybody? And then you go through this freak out stage. And over the last several years, writing several different Asian American and Pacific Islander characters, the thing that I've come to realize and understand is this. I think, personally, the best thing that you can do in terms of like writing representation, however you want to understand that you are writing a character first, and ask yourself, is this a character that I love? Is this a character that I feel is fully fleshed out? Is this a character that I believe in, that I feel like younger me would have loved to see? You know, who am I pleasing with this character? Realistically, the only person I can guarantee to make happy is me. And I have to believe that if I can do that, then like other people will feel the same way that I feel, and that'll be good. And then on top of that, I think the flip side is to also understand that regardless of what you do, no matter how happy you make yourself, there are going to be a segment of the population that is upset. And that is okay. There's nothing wrong with that. If portions of the Asian American community like see something that you've created and say, I don't see myself in that, that is okay. They are allowed to be mad at you. They're allowed to be mad at the content. Because the reality is that part is not about you. That part is about the fact that there's not enough representation out there, period. And it's not fair that we all have to kind of like look at whatever character is on, you know, a screen or in a book or in a comic and hope that they're reflective of us, because there's just not enough out there. So if you understand those things, I think it makes a big difference, because it's like the anger that is coming is not really about me. It's about the lack of what is out there. And it's okay. I'm just going to keep creating. I'm going to keep creating specific characters. They're all different. You know, none of my characters are exactly the same. And hopefully somewhere along the line, you know, I will be able to create more characters that different people see themselves in. And we can hopefully make it better for everybody and less of a sort of, you know, I grew up with Margaret Cho and Ke Kwan. I didn't have that many options, guys, you know, and they were great and I love them and they made huge differences for me. So all I want to do is create as much content and as many characters as possible so that like later generations of creators are going to create more and we just keep going. So
yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think that the artists you mentioned, like I certainly remember seeing Margaret Cho on TV for the first time as like a suburban child growing up in an almost all white town. And just the fact that she was so herself. You know, she was so being herself, even kind of the mold they kind of tried to put her in on the TV show, which kept changing. You know, it felt like she was being herself. And I felt like I had never quite seen that before. You know, she's still such an icon, such a legend. And I think she did the thing that you're talking about as far as what we're all hoping to do, which is to kind of open the door just a little more for the people who are coming next. Open the door so that those people can also write their experiences. And, you know, then everyone can hopefully eventually have whoever their heroine is, whoever that they identify with. I think that's kind of the point, is just to keep having more. And, you know, the way I've sort of dealt with rep sweats is just, I think, having that community, especially of Asian American creators and artists, and, you know, and also all different women of color who are sort of, you know, we can sort of talk about these things in a very honest way and talk about where they're coming from and talk about, you know, how that, like you were saying, how that's sort of coming from a lack of things. And, you know, I think for me, what I hopefully eventually landed on was also kind of along the lines of what you were both saying, as far as just making sure that it's real. So when I create a character who is an Asian, you know, almost, I think pretty much all my big characters are Asian American heroines of some kind. I just always try to make sure that she's real. And a lot of times that means that she's messy and has a lot of bad habits and, you know, perhaps some other things I take from my real life. But I think it's important just to make sure that, you know, that's kind of the basis of good writing, right? Is to make sure that the character is a fully rounded character.
Yeah. And I think to look on the bright side too, I think, and just coming from like a younger perspective, being in Generation Z and stuff, I think there are a lot of role models and people that young Asian American women and just women of color can look up to. And I think that's really important to have now, where we can cosplay a superheroine that we really like, and we can feel like we are represented in the community. And I think just like going back to Cassandra Cain, I thought it was so fun to create a character that everybody could really relate to, and making, like you said, making someone that isn't necessarily like fully perfect, you know, like someone who you can feel like you could relate to, which is why I really like that sort of anti-hero character as well, like Harley Quinn and like Cassandra Cain, where you feel like they're not perfect, so you can kind of see yourself in them as well. So
yeah, for sure. I mean, I think Birds of Prey, if I had that movie when I was 12, well, first of all, my parents wouldn't have let me watch it because my mom was very strict about that R rating. It's very strict. I didn't see a lot of movies until much later. But that movie, I think, was such a, like, it was just like, you know, all these different women, different in personality, different in identity, different in background, coming together as a team and as a very messy, not perfect team, and still, you know, kicking a lot of ass. And even just having the, you know, those elements, like the movie was like so amazing anyway. But even if it hadn't been, I felt like just seeing that was so amazing. You know, it felt like if I had seen that when I was 12, it would have, I think, really made a difference. Like it would have really made me see myself as more of, you know, a main character. Another thing that was kind of touched on that I wanted to get into was, you know, we're talking about sort of the, you know, state of the Asian American superhero, and is like the clever sounding title I came up with for this. And so I was thinking about, you know, the past 5 years since the first heroine debuted, and how things have maybe changed, how they haven't. And, you know, in the latest in Hollywood heroine, Evie and Aveda are watching this sort of horribly gone wrong TV show based on their lives. They're watching the production of it. And there's sort of a lot of talk about stereotypes. What is niche? What is considered universal? What is considered four quadrant? White people kind of co-opting the narratives of people of color. And just all of those things that go into, you know, even now making something that puts us at the forefront. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how maybe we've seen the Asian American superhero, superheroine, leading character in pop culture really evolve over the last few years? You know, what kind of progress have we seen? What still needs improvement? Like, I don't know, just kind of taking a big picture perspective on that.
It's interesting because I think that a lot of things are starting to change the more of us that are creating characters. And I think some of that is being expressed in various ways. Something that I find interesting that you said is like, you like messy characters. That is a big one for me. My least favorite Asian female stereotype is the idea of the perfectly composed, like sort of like meek Asian female who gets straight A's and ends up at Harvard. That's like my least favorite stereotype because I am messy as hell. Like, I'm just like, I like messy characters. So yeah, it's things like that. And then like, I also don't like the silent Asian female stereotype. Just there's a bunch of various stereotypes that I do think in the last few years I've seen Asian American creators start to create certain characters or specifically counter to those things. And Sarah, like, correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like 5 years ago when you first published the first book in the Heroine series, you made a comment about how like the book was about, you had this realization that you always saw yourself as a sidekick and you were finally going to write yourself as a main character. And I was, and that has stuck with me for years. I have actually quoted you in the Magician's Room, and there's a storyline with Katie in season 4 that is literally based off of you saying that. So,
Well, I'm totally going to take credit for that now.
You should.
I'm going to go on every panel and be like, you know that story in the Magicians? That was actually about me. I am now taking credit for it. But that's awesome. I mean, I think that also shows that community element, right? Because I feel like for me, a lot of this evolution has been meeting other creators like both of you who are doing things in this space, you know? And I think like the significance of that really can't be underestimated. It's just, you know, when my series came out, C.B. Lee, who's an amazing writer, also had a young adult Asian American hero series, which was about, you know, is very different from my heroines, but they're still Asian American superheroes. They still, you know, are fighting evil and they're super villains and there's powers and there's cool robots. And I just thought, how cool that we both have these and that they're so different and that they can kind of appeal to both the same audience and completely different audiences. So I love seeing that sort of, you know, even just that like sort of progress as well.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh no, I mean, I just think that, you know, we've really like more recently branched out from this sort of stereotypical narrative of being, you know, the violin playing straight A student who doesn't really talk, is very quiet and shy. And I think that's really, really important, especially for the younger generation of our community to kind of look up to these characters. And I mean, even just like, not even just specifically superheroes or, you know, superheroines. I think even just in pop culture with the music industry, like Olivia Rodrigo, I'm so happy that we have a role model who's half Filipino, someone who I can relate to. And even just like Saweetie and her, who are also my half Panay sisters, I like to consider them. But yeah, I just think it's so cool that we can finally see people that we can connect to. And I think it's important that this continuously happen, or this is continuing to happen, because obviously we're not done, you know, the movement hasn't stopped. So I just think it's important that we continue to write our stories and make movies and make comic books and different projects that can really project who we are as people. And it's not just like one narrative, it's multiple, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really want to stress that point in particular. Like, listen, I don't care what the industry quote unquote wants, write what you feel like you need and you don't see. Finding Ohana was such an incredible experience for me because I wrote that script in grad school. I literally wrote it because I loved Goonies and I love Ki Kwan, and I never got to see Asian female characters be the, you know, precocious, like lead main character who did all the cool things that little boys were allowed to do, but girls couldn't. So I wrote that script. And when I came out of grad school, my managers were sending it around. The response that I got from producers was essentially that like, That movie starred three Asian American and Pacific Islander kids and one white kid. They would never be able to find a cast for it. So they could never make it. Like, they were just like, nobody's gonna make this movie. And then Netflix did. So like, and part of the reason they did was my exec was looking for like an Indiana Jones movie for kids, and she's Asian. And she was like, I want my version of that. And so this script existed, and she was like, this is what I'm looking for. And so the movie got made. So like, don't ever, writing from a place of frustration and need is sometimes good. Sometimes you get a movie out of it.
Sometimes your rage will power you to places you didn't even realize. I mean, I think that's so true. And I love what you both said about that. I mean, I would have also died for, I still would, you know, Olivia Rodrigo, like I was so into like, you know, Riot Girls and like all this kind of like angry, but still really catchy music when I was younger. And she kind of takes me back to that, except I'm like, oh, it's like an Asian girl doing it. That is like the coolest thing ever. And, you know, I also, I love the idea that, you know, we had to just keep kind of doing it and also moving beyond what people will tell us the conventional wisdom is, right? Because certainly when I wrote the first book in the series, before I had an agent, before I had anything, there were a lot of people who wanted to tell me, this is not marketable. This is not sellable. This is very niche. Even after I sold it. And by the way, it was never the people I was actually working with who said this to me. They were all very supportive, but it was, you know, like they put both of them on the cover. And I remember people saying like, oh, they won't put them on the cover, or they'll whitewash them, or they won't put them both on the cover, or, oh, well, if this gets made into a TV show, like one of them will have to be white. That's just the way it is. And I think that, you know, as a young creative, I had kind of internalized a lot of that. So to be able to then say like, actually, y'all were wrong about all of that, it's very satisfying. And I think also as we see our younger audience becoming more and more diverse, becoming more and more wanting of these things that actually represent their experiences, I hope that will mean, you know, diversity within the media as well. And I can certainly say that, you know, since I debuted back in 2016, I remember just one anecdote that maybe illustrates this is I have in this series this sort of idea that these two women were inspired when they were girls by watching the movie The Heroic Trio, which is an old Hong Kong action movie. And one of the stars is Michelle Yeoh. And I had put this whole thread in, especially the first book, about Michelle Yeoh, because Evie, the main character, sort of relates to her. She relates to like the, you know, this ending part where she's kind of like letting a tear fall over her, the one man that she loves, and then putting on like a red jumpsuit and going and fighting things. And I remember that a lot of people asked me when this first came out, did you make that movie up? Did you make that actress up? Did you, like, is this a figment of your imagination? And now I feel like at least, you know, people know who Michelle Yeoh is, because we're having kind of, can we call it a Yeoh-essence? We're having,
yes,
like, you know, a moment where she is like in every major property in existence.
I'm still kind of horrified that in 2016, that
I know. Christina, we knew. It's okay. Nobody else, we knew, but other people didn't. Okay. Shockingly, we are getting to kind of the end portion of this. So I'm going to look in the chat and maybe take a couple questions, and, you know, we can keep talking about some other stuff. But okay, so we have one from the amazing author, Rebecca Weatherspoon. Her book came out yesterday too. You should order all of her Cowboys of California series, because guess what? You can use this discount code to order any books you want from the Rip Bodice. So definitely order those too. She would like to know from all of us, what piece of media or genre would you like to see more Asian women in? Very interesting question. All right, I'll give you a minute to think about that. This is like,
well,
ask me like, what book have you read? And I forget that I've ever read a book, or that books are things, or, you know. Okay, go ahead, Christina.
I just want more female-led supernatural creature hunting shows. Just going to say that. That's really my heart. I want to hunt ghosts and supernatural creatures. That's all I got.
Amazing. Love it. How about you, Ella?
I think like coming of age and rom-com movies as well, because I remember when Lana Condor came out with the To All the Boys I've Loved Before, like that was so iconic for me because I saw Lana Condor kissing two guys and just really setting this sort of Molly Ringwald sort of example for all of the young girls out there. And the fact that like me and my friends just like can regularly talk about her. I kind of want to see more of that sort of rom-com scene with the Asian American community. I think that would be really cool to see a lot more of that. And I think, you know, Crazy Rich Asians was such an iconic thing as well. But yeah, I think like a lot of teen and coming of age stuff for the younger community of Asian Americans would be really, really cool.
Love that. Also big props to Jenny Han for writing those amazing books that got made into serious Netflix franchise. Also, there are many other awesome Asian American women writing Y rom-com that should all be adapted everywhere. So all the people from Netflix watching this, please option all of those books and make them into amazing movies because Ella would really like that. And so would the rest of us. I think for me, what I would love to see, which isn't exactly a genre or, you know, a kind of media, but it sort of goes back to something Christina was talking about earlier, which is I love Asian girl dirt bags, like just like, you know, just these really like messy, like making bad decisions, like not great at life. Like, you know, I think like you were saying earlier, there is kind of a stereotype of us that we're so perfect and reserved and, you know, doing everything right. And that is certainly not me. So I would like to see more Asian lady dirtbag representation. That's what I would like.
Asian flea bag.
Asian flea bag. Love it. You know, and I think that also speaks to something else that I am fond of talking about, which is I think that Asian creators also can take those things that seem like stereotypes because we've seen them in a very flattened way, mostly from white creators, and making those into really full characters. Because, you know, there are a lot of Asian girls who play the violin or who got straight A's or, you know, whatever. And they, I feel like, haven't seen their experiences accurately represented yet either a lot, because that requires someone to write that really full character that I think requires an Asian American woman who has had that experience to write that character. So I would love to see more of that as well. You know, the sort of moving beyond the stereotype is something I've also thought about a lot, because I have this character, B, who is the little sister of the franchise. And she has, as you can see, blue and purple hair. And there was a thing a few years ago about the Asian girl hair streak where someone noticed that, you know, a lot of the sort of rebellious Asian girl characters have this like blue or purple hair streak that says like, look, I'm a badass. I'm not like those other Asian stereotypes. And then that, so then people started saying, oh, like that's a stereotype because the hair streak is kind of her whole personality. Like it's standing in for her whole personality. But then I feel like it goes to a place where people just see the hair streak and they're like, stereotype. And I'm like, okay, this character is the main character in this book. She's very well-rounded. She has lots of personality traits, not just her hair streaks. Also, there are real life Asian girls who have hair streaks. They deserve representation too. So
my Finding Ohana director, Jude Wang, has a blue streak and she's very proud of it. And she's like, I know people think it's a stereotype, but I really love it. So
but see, that is so like frustrating, right? Because then it leads, you know, like I've also had that conversation with like Asian American women who do martial arts or like stunt women or like, you know, enjoy being athletic. Like sometimes that's a stereotype. And it's like, no. It's just that this has been flattened so much. And I think something like, you know, you mentioned earlier, the new Kung Fu, like I remember just watching that pilot and that opening where it's like three amazing Asian woman characters and doing martial arts. I was like, okay, let's go. Let, you know, this feels like we're finally getting a chance to like do martial arts, but I guess not in a stereotypical way. So. Okay, we have another question from Winter. Ella, Cassandra Cain was a much different character in Birds of Prey than in the comics. Was that always the case? How did it feel being Harley's apprentice as opposed to being Batman's adopted daughter from the comics?
I think the dynamic between Cassandra Cain and Harley versus, you know, Cassandra Cain and Batman in the comic books is for sure a lot different. I think Cassandra Cain, no matter who her role model is or no matter who she's the apprentice to, I think she's always going to be this very independent and brave character who can be a little messy. But in Birds of Prey, a lot of the relationships between Harley and Cassandra Cain were based off a comic book. I think it was called Blue Eyes with Harley Quinn and her apprentice. But yeah, I think with creating Cassandra Cain's relationship with Harley Quinn, I think a lot of it was taken from a bunch of different comic books and stuff. So it's not fully like the comics. And I know some fans are really upset about that, but really we tried to make this sort of relationship and dynamic between Harley and Cassandra Cain that was really wholesome and sweet and kind of like a big sister, little sister relationship that I think a lot of women can relate to, you know, that sisterhood and that feeling of having an older sister who, you know, gives you tips on boys and gives you tips on, you know, who to like and who to trust and mean girls and all of that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I can also like speak a little bit to this as someone who wrote a Cassandra Cain that was a little bit closer to, you know, what we had seen in the comics. It was a different Cassandra Cain because the young readers books are in a whole other continuity. You know, it's we can make the characters a little bit different. But I felt watching you in that movie, I was just like, this is Cassandra Cain. Like this, like the feeling I'm getting from this character is still so Cassandra Cain. And I think the relationship they built with Harley actually reminded me of a relationship that we had zeroed in on in Shadow of the Batgirl, which it was the relationship with Barbara Gordon. You know, that was, I think, a very sisterly mentor relationship. True, in Birds of Prey, it's more mentor to like be a better jewel thief. And in like more traditional continuity, it's like, you know, they're trying to help her be like a superhero like Batman, right? Yeah. But I felt like those elements were very similar. Those elements like touched my heart a lot because I felt like I could see both that Cassandra Cain that I had really, you know, loved the comic book Cassandra Cain and this new version who was also to me had the spirit of Cassandra Cain. I think there's a moment sort of near the end where she's finally allowing herself to be vulnerable, you know, and it's because she has actually become close to all these women, especially Harley. And the acting you did in that moment was so amazing because I was like crying, but I was also like, this is Cassandra Cain. And, you know, whenever people had tried to push back a little bit on that, I'm like, no, I will fight you. That is Cassandra Cain in that movie.
Honestly, I'm like, I'm so honored that that's your opinion about the character because there's definitely been you know, hate comments and different things like that. But I just think that, you know, with Kathy and the writer Christina, we really tried to make it as authentic and related to the comics, but at the same time, more evolved and a sort of different take on Cassandra, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, we all, the team behind Shadow of the Batgirl, we also consider that Cassandra Cain to be our child as well. You did an excellent job.
Spend some time with these characters and they genuinely become your kids.
Like, yeah. And then you start like wondering what they're doing when you're not there. Like it gets very weird. I feel like from the writer's side, it gets very weird sometimes. Okay, so we are sort of running out of time. So I'm going to ask one more discussion question and then we'll do sort of our, you know, where can people find you classic goodbyes. But this is something I wanted to talk about because it ended up being a very key theme in Hollywood heroine. And I guess like the heroine books in particular, you know, we were talking earlier about putting yourself into your work and, you know, how that sort of comes about. And I noticed with all of the heroine books, like when I go back and read them later, they're always about something that I was going through at the time. And it's like not something I realized while I'm writing it, but it's always something that I read and I'm like, oh, okay, okay, I'm going to bring this to therapy. You know, it's going to be great. But in this book, I was writing an Asian American superheroine who is extremely burned out and who is kind of in this constant 911 mode. She feels like she has to solve all these problems all by herself. She feels like she can't ask for help. Like, you know, it feels like a very, it feels like what honestly a lot of us were going through like the past 2 years. So I think that what we as women of color deal with as far as burnout is very specific. It's like this combination of, you know, the regular burnout and then also dealing with microaggressions, macroaggressions, just aggressions, all while feeling like, you know, you have to show up, you have to be present, you have to be, give 1,000%. You kind of have to be this real life superheroine. And it's a lot. So I was wondering if we could all talk about, as, you know, creative types leading creative lives, how do we all deal with burnout? And honestly, part of why I asked this question is because I would like to know the answer.
You want to go, Ella?
I don't know. I just like, I think, gosh, when I think about like burnout specifically, it's about like school and obviously microaggressions from, you know, media and all of that. So I think just like finding creative outlets is something that's really helped me cope with like the stress and anxiety that I've dealt with in the past. And I think, I mean, I've been writing music and writing songs and playing the guitar and like all of these instruments, honestly, since I've been able to talk. So I think it's something that's really close to me and something that I really love using. Like a lot of my songs, if you, not plugging myself or, you know, shouting myself out, but if you listen to a lot of my music, it has to do with a lot of experiences that I've dealt with in real life. You know, feeling insecure because of social media or not feeling like my body is the right type of body that, you know, people accept. And just writing and, you know, having a different creative outlet than just, you know, acting or playing in a movie is something that I really love doing. The way you guys talk about how you write about characters that you relate to and you kind of put yourself into those characters that you write, I kind of feel the same way with like songs that I make. And it's really just fun for me too. And it's sort of a break that I love going to, and just playing the ukulele on a rainy day is like my kind of day. So yeah.
Love it. How about you, Christina?
I have kids, so I don't have the ability to become I have a few different things. Cause like, you know, my first career was coloring. So it used to be that art actually wasn't a means of decompression for me, because that was my day job. So interestingly enough, my means of decompressing when I was an artist was to then write web comics and write stories. And that was like what my way of being, like if I was frustrated, I had this thing I called spandex fatigue, because I grew up in Asia, I grew up reading manga that, you know, which is genre diverse. So when I started working for Marvel, and I worked for them for 10 years, about 7 years in, I was like, I need something other than superheroes. Like I need a break. So writing was kind of a decompression thing for me, along with, you know, consuming television and reading books and consuming media and basically letting story wash over me without requiring myself to think of it. But now that I'm a writer, writing is no longer decompression for me. It is and it isn't. Like when I'm frustrated with my work, like the jobs that I am getting paid to write, like when I find it's frustrating, like when I'm dealing with network execs that I'm annoyed with or whatever, I'm getting notes that are like, these are bad notes and you're actively making things worse. Then I'm like, I'm going to come up with story ideas that I want to write for myself. And once I've decompressed a little, I'll work on that just to kind of get what I want out of it. But right now, to be perfectly honest, the thing I do to decompress is watch run BTS episodes.
I thought you were going to say Squid Game.
I mean, I watch all kinds of TV and I will, and I read comics and like, I still, that has always been a thing for me. Like, and I do think that that is a way that I do decompress because it allows me to turn my brain off. But shockingly during the pandemic, genuinely, I've become a massive BTS fan. And right now that's the only thing that makes me super happy. So like, I'm a roll with it and just let it be.
No, you go with that. I think anything we discover that helps us or makes us happier refills the well at this point in time, especially, is extremely valid.
It's so funny because it's not even necessarily that it refills the well so much as just allows me to like float on the water and do nothing.
Well, you're like floating in your own well. Like it's like a relaxing well of BTS. Yeah. Surrounding you with their armies.
Yes, I'm just like, I don't have to think about story. I don't have to analyze anything I'm watching. Because like with Squid Game, I love it, but I'll be thinking about the historical context in which the genre is referencing. I watch Run BTS and they're really dumb and rolling on the carpet. And I'm just like, this is great. I'm not thinking about anything.
So my visual of you now is going to be like, what, like you refreshing more, roll on the floor more, like just refreshing that over it, like just continuous rolling. But yeah, I mean that both of those are excellent responses. And I think for me, I guess a couple things I can think of. One is, you know, along the lines of what you were just saying, Christina, like I think when your creative outlet becomes your work, becomes, you know, the thing you are making a living at, sometimes that sucks the joy out of consuming the thing that you used to consume as a fan, because right, you're just like analyzing it. What are these story beats? Where's the act break? Oh my God. You know, like it kind of turns into more work that you're giving yourself for some reason. And so one thing I have really tried to develop during the pandemic with, I would say some success is being able to consume media in a way that where I'm turning off the writer brain. Like I'm sort of trying to reconnect with that. Like, remember when you were a fan and you like read all these books and watched all these shows and you just sort of took joy in them. You just kind of consumed them and enjoyed it. And you didn't sit there analyzing story structure. And, you know, so that's an ongoing challenge, but that's something I've really tried to do because a lot of times that is what brings me joy is like, you know, just like experiencing someone else's art that they put a lot of time into that's, you know, so joyful to me. I love that. And then the other thing is something we kind of talked about before, which is, you know, this book, again, like Aveda, the main character, she's having trouble asking for help, even though she has this wonderful supportive community around her. And so for me, you know, I'm the kind of person that a lot of times if I am depressed or I'm feeling bad things about my life or my work or whatever, I will sort of withdraw because I'm like, no one wants to hear about that. Like people got their own problems. And I really had to learn how to reach out for that, you know, how to like, enjoy those communities that I had spent a lot of time, you know, fostering, investing in, and, you know, making this kind of beautiful, like, togetherness thing among all of us. So I had to, you know, that's something I really had to do to, like, work against burnout is learn how to, like, ask for help, ask for community, ask for, you know, someone to just listen to you vent and then you can listen to them vent. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing, honestly. So I think that's something that is also important to living a creative life when you are prone to burnout, as I think most of us are just because of the nature of all of these businesses and the nature of the world at large, is just like, learning how to, you know, accept help from that community, learning how to you know, know the people that you can rely on and that you can sort of like come to with these things so that you aren't just sort of sitting by yourself, sad at home, like in your little Zoom window, you know, not knowing how you're going to continue doing your art. I think that's very important.
Agreed.
All right. So we are now, I believe, at the end of our time. It always goes so fast. It especially goes fast when I'm talking to two amazing people. So if we could just go around and say again, like anything that you want people to check out, anything you're working on that you wanted people to know about, and then just where the best places to find you on the internet. And Ella, why don't you go first?
Yeah, you can find me on pretty much every social media platform at Ella J. Bosco. I am also on Spotify and all music platforms as well. I'm coming out with some new music that I'm very excited about. So yeah, you can check me out there and really just social media, because I will keep you posted on anything else that is going on.
Awesome. How about you, Christina?
For social media, you really can only find me on Twitter because my Instagram is private because I put my kids on there. So, so Christina Strain on Twitter. You can find my stuff, Generation X, in comic shops and bookstores. On Netflix, you can watch Finding Ohana, my movie, my ode to Goonies. Shadow and Bone is also up, season one. We wrote season two and we're going to be shooting it. So look forward to that. Also, The Magicians is also on Netflix. It's all on Netflix. And then for no reason in particular, watch Cowboy Bebop.
No reason at all for that, Christina. Just it's going to be a great show, right? That's what you're saying. It's going to be a really
awesome
show.
Yeah. Yes.
And hashtag starring John Cho. Will you? Good job.
Good job, Will. Looking forward to. Yeah. You're short.
Okay. Thank you again for joining us. I am Sarah Kuhn. You can find me on Twitter. It's just my name, Sarah Kuhn. On Instagram, I'm Sarah Kuhn Books, because some jerk took Sarah Kuhn. They aren't even using it. That's where you can find me there. My latest book, again, it's Hollywood Heroine. And From Little Tokyo with Love also came out earlier this year, but because of how time works, it seems like it was 10 years ago. And my website that probably needs to be updated is heroincomplex.com. That's heroin like super heroin, not like the drug. Teresa, come back and join us for the last Rip Bodice goodbyes. We are ready for you.
Thank you so much for this really amazing panel. We had such great comments. Everyone loved all the topics that you covered. If anyone tuned in late or want to watch it all over again, it will be archived on Facebook immediately after this. We will have our promo code for another 24 hours. That is heroin, not like the drugs, like the book, Heroin Complex, Hollywood Heroin. And thank you so much. And everyone have a good night.
Yes, thank you. Forever
Dog. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ Forever Dog Team and liking our page on Facebook.